So he starts by saying, merits painstakingly gathered over 1,000 eons will be destroyed in a flash of anger. Right? So in other words, right, all of the virtuous deeds that we have been offering, living into, right, all of the goodness, the kindness, the sensitivity, the care, the love, right, that we feel we have been offering, can sometimes feel wiped out, right? In a, I want to suggest a really powerful experience of anger. Irritation, usually we can recover fairly easily. We're annoyed. Many of us can recover. But when the anger reaches a certain threshold, those of you who know me know I'm also a clinician, I'm also a psychoanalyst, so I really appreciate that range in our experience of feeling. So I would suggest when we get into that territory of rage or hatred, which is human, right? We all feel it at some point. It can come in and seem to wipe out all of that love, right? All of those moments of connection and intimacy and trust we may have been building. So he says, therefore, there's no virtue like patience, which I must strive to cultivate. Well, under the influence of anger, no joy, peace, or sleep is to be found. An angry person is in danger of being attacked, even by those who depend on their kindness. They will be abandoned by friends, losing happiness and peace of mind. Recognizing these struggles with anger, I must perceive and persevere in overcoming it in order to find peace. I'll just read you one more stanza. Being unhappy at not getting what I want or at getting what I don't want is the fuel for anger. This is often a primary fuel for our anger. Something happened that we did not wish to happen, right? And collectively, we're living through a time where this seems to be the case. There are events happening that many people do not want. Or getting what we don't want, right? Not getting what we do want. If you were really just to reduce all of the complexity of what contributes to anger, this is often a key trigger. Right? Now, if you carry on reading this section on patience, you find that it is a direct response to our very human struggle with anger. And it goes about laying out the primary triggers, right? Those are two primary triggers, right? Something happened to me, it's not at all what I wanted. I felt I was living my life in a way to avoid this very thing. And it happened anyway, and I am furious, right? Or something that I anticipated, maybe unconsciously or semi-consciously, would happen. Something good, right, that I imagined was simply going to happen by nature of being a person, right? Didn't happen. Fury, right? These experiences are very personal. And each one of us has our own example, right, of something happening to us that we did not wish for, right? Some beloved leaving us in ways that we could not have anticipated, or someone who's harmful coming toward us in some way that we did not want, or some collective experience right, happening to many people that we're a part of and we don't want. Right? Often the human response is anger. Now, as a clinician, I want to suggest that anger is not inherently problematic. In the same way, love, right, delight, excitement, desire, also not inherently problematic. However, it is an emotion that usually causes us a great deal of suffering. In part, because it's very, very challenging to slow things down enough in order to genuinely understand what has happened that's caused the anger. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Anger, it's a little bit like lava, right? It can erupt, and it seems to have a power and a pace of its own that overtakes us, which can make it so difficult to basically relate to the lava and say, okay, I get that you're there, I see it, but may I ask you to settle just enough? Right? Don't erupt just yet, because I still don't fully understand what's happened. And in the absence of that understanding, and this is really what Shantideva gets to in this chapter, I'm going to make up a story about what's happened. And then I'm going to refine the story. I'm going to keep revisiting it. Right? This is really the stuff of obsession, remuneration, right? I'm going to keep going back. Bless you. Until I've got the story exactly right in my mind. Almost as a way to sustain the anger. Right? I'm angry because of what's happened, and I understand it so... I do this all the time, right? The things that are very shocking. The mind is searching for some insight and also searching for some feeling of control. And so it's really tempting to use our minds to try to create a narrative, an airtight story that helps us feel more oriented toward what's happened, but also justifies the lava that keeps flowing. Right? And so this teaching of patience says, all right, we all have this struggle. I hope it's okay for me to generalize. Right? I know we all experience it uniquely. But most of us, some people would say, I'm just not angry, I don't know what you're talking about. It's not my thing, I get anxious, but I don't get angry. And that's true, right? So not everybody experiences this struggle in the same way. But for those of us who have had personal experience with the lava of rage or hatred, often what is most needed is some way to really slow things down, which I want to suggest does not mean pathologizing the anger, right? Because if we're oriented towards spirituality, it can feel very shameful. I'm such a nice person. Normally, I like to read the Dharma, or read the Bible, whatever it is you're drawn to in your spiritual life, and then I freak out at the bus driver, or I freak out at the delivery person because they threw my package in and the thing I was waiting for chipped. So it can feel very shameful. Or I want to be compassionate and patient and kind, but there's this one person who is the object of my rage because of the 12 reasons that I could tell you all about very specifically, because I've been thinking about this quite a lot for the last 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. The mind is a very interesting place. So, Shantideva says, all right, one way to help us slow down is to begin to reflect upon some of our misperceptions that might generate more anger. One of them is in response to feeling criticized, feeling unjustly blamed, feeling disrespected. That's very painful, right? It's just that whomever it was who criticized us, disrespected us, falsely accused us of something, right? Arrived at that moment due to all sorts of causes and conditions that are usually fairly complex. And when you start to slow down, right, when the lava starts to settle a little bit, cools a little bit so that it's safe enough to have a look, often we begin to notice more. Right, so let's say it's a person, it's a friend who we love and we trust, and so we call this friend to tell them about something unbelievable that happened, either unbelievably wonderful or unbelievably awful. They don't have much to say. They just listen, but they're not really getting it. Right, they're not meeting you where you are. They're not saying, this is incredible, I am so excited for you. Finally, this thing happened. Or, ah, I'm so sorry this happened. This is outrageous. Right, I'm really joining you in the experience. Often that can cause strong anger of, you're not giving me what I need. You're not giving me what I want. You're disappointing me. And then the mind can go off from there. You are inherently disappointing. You are so limited. Look at what happens. You're deficient. Oof. We can very quickly go from love and affection to radical dislike, impatience, disappointment. And so with this practice of patience, we can notice the feelings. I didn't get what I hoped for, right? I called you in a moment of crisis. I needed somebody just to help me make sense of it, or even just to help me hold the experience because it's too much to hold alone. And you had a curious way of looking out the window when I was telling you what happened. Or you were looking at your phone. Or you seemed bored. Or you seemed judgmental. I don't like you anymore. Right? You see, we're so fascinating how easily the mind needs to get control of these experiences and comes up with a story that does not do justice to the complexity. Because probably, I'll just finish this thought and I'll take your comment, question. If you really slow down, you're going to begin to notice, I have a tendency to go to this person who I sense isn't really able to offer me the attunement that I long for because they have a tendency to get overwhelmed when they sense somebody is needing something specific from them. They get immobilized. But I keep going back to that person. I wonder why. am I repeating a dynamic that I'm really familiar with? Am I insisting that one person meet my needs and then suffering outrageous disappointment when they cannot? Or you might think more about the other person. They just came from something that overwhelmed them, and they're not yet able. Right? Or they came from 16 things. They're not yet able to offer me what I'm needing. And instead of being frustrated with those conditions, I'm frustrated with that person. And so Shantideva says, if we can begin to notice more, right, more of the conditions that lead to these experiences that upset us, the mind will stay more curious about those conditions and will be less inclined to write off the person or the people who upset us. And then, and this can really get quite radical in the Buddha Dharma, we might still be frustrated, right? Because it is frustrating when you need something. If you're thirsty and there's no water, it's going to be frustrating, right? If you're lonely and you risk exposing a need to someone and they just can't meet it, it's going to be frustrating. This is human. But with the practice of patience, we might feel the frustration and the disappointment as well as our awareness that this is also someone who is sacred. This is someone who has precious human life. This is someone who has suffered and is still suffering. This is someone who, like me, wants to live more fully and feel a little bit freed up from difficulties and pain. And this is someone whose repetitive psychic patterns get in the way of that well-being. The compassion, right? It can come back. Now, Shantideva really pushes things, and then I will take your question. Shantideva says, and this is where the teaching can get a little edgy, and when I co-teach with my teacher, I'm so aware of how edgy the teachings become because I appreciate their psychological impact. Shantideva says, if you really practice patience, even the people who upset us, like maybe especially the people who upset us, are the objects of our respect and our appreciation. And he says part of the reason why is because we don't typically cultivate patience with the people who are easy to deal with. Right? The people who know exactly what you need, right? And you can just think, who's the friend, if you've been fortunate enough to have someone who's pretty good at noticing what you need and staying relatively attuned, those people don't require much patience, right? But the people who really struggle to give us what we long for, right? Or have a tendency to consistently give us what we don't want, well, those are the people, right? Those, and you can check. Those are usually the people who stop us in our tracks. And they really shine a light on what's happening in our mind and in our heart that causes so much anger. And those are usually the people, if we're willing, and I'm not suggesting this is easy, because it really isn't. But those are the people who will almost demand that we slow down so that we don't get burned alive by the lava. Because for those of you who have felt hatred and rage, you know it has a burning impact. It can feel like it's not survivable. Right? And so that experience doesn't pour over others. Yeah. So if we care, right, if we care about ourselves or we care about others, it is the difficult people in our lives who will almost demand we cultivate the patience to really understand what has happened. And maybe even to allow for many different feelings about what's happened. There are a few other triggers that Shantideva writes about. One of them is jealousy. Right? Just as we long for the good, right? We hope for conditions that help us feel well. We sometimes resent other people, right, for experiencing the good, or perhaps, from our perspective, more easily getting the good stuff in life. And there's truth to this, right? We all know there are certain people in this world who are more likely to have access to resources of all kinds. And there are people, depending on one's body, right, and one's sociocultural context, who are more likely to struggle to access those resources. And so resentment and jealousy can easily get mobilized. It happened to me on the way over. I was walking here, and it's ridiculous. I saw a relatively new building, very fancy apartment building that had gone up in the middle of a block, which doesn't happen as often as on the corners, but it's happening more now. And as I passed by, a young woman with a cute dog was exiting the building. And I thought, oh, well, isn't that great? Because these apartments probably cost a few million dollars, right? And so I felt envy. And then I thought, I don't know anything about this human being's reality, her suffering, her conditions. For all I know, she has been working tirelessly for the last 20 years to be able to live there, and is now stuck in a job that doesn't feed her soul, but she's beholden to the work because she's created a life that now needs to be supported or given up. I don't know anything about this person's reality. But I felt it. She can have the fancy, beautiful apartment with every amenity, right? Where's my gorgeous apartment? Right, I mean, in New York, we have a lot of real estate envy, right? Among other sorts of envies, right? And it was so interesting, right? I've been practicing this teaching for most of my adult life, but it was so good for me to see in an instant that envy, that jealousy can be mobilized without any grounds for it in terms of the reality and the complexity of the situation. Now, I'm not suggesting that we should be ashamed of the jealousy, because it is, as I was saying a moment ago, it's true that there is, you know, there's inequity in this world, right? There's injustice. And that example is in no way a representation of the kinds of inequities that exist. You think about a child, right? There are many children in this world who don't have enough food, right? And their poor mothers know it. They have to watch their child not get the food that's needed because of a political conflict far away that's preventing the food from arriving to keep the child alive. That's suffering, right? And probably there's going to be resentment there. Why can't these politicians understand the ripple effects of their decisions, their behavior? It's not conceptual. It could take somebody's life. Right? So again, these emotions, they can have powerful causes, powerful triggers. So Shantideva says, that's true, but we have to do everything we can to protect our minds, and especially to protect our peace of mind. And I don't mean that to suggest this is something that should be used to bypass or to scaffold over the example I've just given, right? Because if you have a starving child who's not getting the food, that's, I think about how much food is, I throw out a lot of food, right? There's plenty of food in this world, right? When you think about these inequities, there's a lot of pain there. But we have to work with our suffering so that it does not rob us of our ability to recover, right? Our ability to access the clarity, the wisdom, the insight that's always there. It's always there. But it tends to get camouflaged by powerful feelings like resentment and jealousy, anger. Right? And so at the very end of this teaching, Shantideva says, and there's so much more there, this is really a pretty synopsis. Please keep appealing to your capacity for clear thinking. Right? Please keep staying curious about the various causes and conditions that upset us so that we don't falsely perceive others as being inherently problematic. Right? So that we don't falsely see other people as lacking preciousness. Lacking what Shantideva would call Buddha nature. Right? And that the more we can really stay curious about all of the causes and conditions that distress us and that cause jealousy, resentment, anger, the more likely we'll be able to practice patience the next time we're upset, we're angry with someone, we're angry with a situation, right? And I'm going to pause in a minute, but I'm just aware that once again, we're currently living through a situation that is causing quite a bit of distress, quite a bit of anger, quite a bit of rage. And many people are afraid, right? Because we're wondering, what is somebody else's lava gonna do to me? What is somebody else's lava going to do to a group, whether it's my group or somebody else's group? Right. And I've been hearing from many people this week, and just in the last couple of days, expressing their great anxiety about other people's relationship to anger and the actions that are taken when we don't practice patience. And so part of what we can do is just stay curious about this teaching as a way of helping oneself start to feel a little more settled, just enough to learn more. It doesn't mean that we stop caring. But the more settled, the more peaceful we're feeling, the more likely we'll be able to investigate, explore the causes and conditions, understand. Not fully. None of us can understand anything fully, especially something very complicated. But the more we're staying curious, right, the less likely we'll be in a reactive state. The more likely we'll be practicing patience, right, which is only going to help. It's going to help us discern how to respond skillfully. It's going to help us discern how to help other people respond, if not skillfully, at least in a way that reduces harm. And then think of the ripple effects, right? If we help ourselves, we are going to help at least one other person. That person is going to help somebody else, right? So this teaching of patience in times of crisis, I would say this is a crisis point, can offer so much critically needed healing, right? So that we're less inclined to react out of the anger, out of the upset, and we're more inclined to use it as fuel to understand as much as we possibly can, to discern what's needed, and to observe as things change, because they invariably will. Doesn't mean they're going to change for the good, right? But they are going to change. And so what we feel saddled with, right, is it's a moment in time. And so this teaching of patience is a way to recognize, okay, there is something extremely impactful happening. And I can get fixated on it, or I can try to understand it. Right? Not hurt myself or others in the process. And try to nurture my own clarity, my own relative peace, right? So that I'm ready for the next wave. Right, I'm ready for whatever might be coming.